It's good to have you here this morning. I'm glad to be home from Colorado. You can't imagine how glad I am to be home from Colorado. I took what would be my most miserable trip of my life, and I haven't ever felt any worse going anywhere. Regretted being there and dreaded the journey home than this last week. Most of you know that I've been ill for 6 weeks now, and the doctor finally, through a process of elimination, determined that I don't have West Nile virus, I have its dirty little cousin. And in other words, I have a mosquito-borne virus that lets me have a fever. I haven't had a fever for a day and a half, but I've been sitting in the back with a wet rag wiping myself down, trying to cool off a little bit. So it's back this morning. But I'm not contagious as long as you don't allow any mosquitoes in this room. But if a mosquito gets in the room and it lands on me, you need to identify that mosquito and not allow it to land on you. Because you can get what I have through transfer of a mosquito. The doctor told me that I would get over it, that my body would build immunity, and that I would get better, and that I ought to expect that to happen sometime this fall. But meanwhile, I'm not to be in the heat, that more effort is not going to make me build endurance, that it's just going to wear me out, and that I'm to do what I feel like doing. And this is like the best doctor advice I ever heard. You know, I'm to do what I feel like doing and quit when I'm tired. But I don't know how it could get better than that. And he also says rubbing the pressure points on the bottom of my feet is something that's really, really helpful. And fortunately, my wife was there to hear that. So we'll see how that goes. Anyway, I'm better than I was and not as good as I hope to be. In Matthew chapter 14, we read about a time that Jesus is escaping people. And he crosses over and they come to the land of Gerizim. And part of what's going on is Jesus is trying to find a place for the disciples to rest. When the men of that place recognized who Jesus was, however, they sent around to all of that region and brought to him anyone that was sick. And they implored him that they might only touch the fringe of his garment. And as many as touched that garment were made well. We read a lot of things in Scripture. And we get totally immune to what it says. But do you see what that says about Jesus? Jesus didn't have to look at someone and say, "I will that you get better." If they simply touched the coat he was wearing, they got better. No wonder people fogged around. No wonder that someone who feels much more poorly than I do would beg their friends, "Just take me to where Jesus is. Let me touch him. Let him touch me. You know, whatever happens, I want to feel better. I want to be better." And Jesus can do this. Mark chapter 6, we have the same story, basically. They cross over, they moor to the shore, and as soon as they get out of the boat, people think, that's Jesus. Now think about that. This is before pictures. It's before television. It's before newsreels. It's before movies. People can figure out who Jesus is. There are so many stories going on around the area that people have such a clear understanding of what he is like and who he's like that they can recognize who he is without really having ever seen him before. They recognized who he was, and they ran about the whole region bringing sick people on their beds to wherever they heard that he was. What do you suppose the impact is on the people who are with him? The disciples who are walking alongside him. I mean, they're trying to find a spot to get away and rest. And people see Jesus and they come fogging. They can't wait to get there. And for the disciples, here's another time. You know, here it goes again. Every place they go, they see the same thing. But do you suppose that there's some point that the fact that they're touching his garment and getting better grows old to them? You think there's some point that the disciples no longer think about the power and the healing and the strength that comes from simply having contact with him? Or is it just another nuisance? Just another struggle. Well, if we kept reading in Mark's story, we'd find out that a bunch of folks come in and they raise a little controversy, and it's people from back home and they're just raising trouble for Jesus. Jesus leaves again. Verse 56, whenever he came in villages, cities, or countryside, they laid the sick in the marketplaces. They implored him that they might touch even the fringe of his garment. As many as touched it were made well. But he finally leaves in the 7th chapter. Verse 24, it says, and he rose from there and went to the region of Tyre and Sidon. Now what that means is he's no longer in Galilee. In order to get rest for his disciples, he's gone to another country to get some distance for them to have some peace. And he entered a house, but didn't want anybody to know about it. You know, it's interesting the way Scripture is read or is written, because the full intent is given. Jesus goes somewhere and he's trying to sneak in. And it's not that Jesus doesn't want to help people. He's trying to get his disciples to a place that they can find rest. And he didn't want anyone to know, yet he couldn't be hidden. That may be the greatest understatement of all Scripture. Is you can't hide Jesus. And immediately, there was a woman there whose little daughter had an unclean spirit. And she heard of Jesus, and she came, and she fell at his feet. You know, when you have a problem, a health issue. Not knowing what it is really frustrating. I've just experienced that. Not knowing what it is, it's frustrating. You know, initially the doctor said I had one thing wrong, and then they came back and said, oh, the culture said it wasn't that. So we're going to give you a different medicine. And I said, well, okay, what's wrong? Well, you know, we'll talk about that in a couple of weeks, see what this medicine does. And so you're trying to figure out how to feel better and everything else. And Janet told me the other day, she said, you got to get better because you're about to kill me. You know, I'm about to be wiped out. And really, I think she's exaggerating. I mean, I have a little bell that I keep by the chair that I can clang if I need her, but I seldom do that. But you know, if you're not sick and your spouse isn't sick, but your child is and you don't have a reason for it, and then what if your suspicion is the reason for your child's illness is some kind of evil spirit? You've got kids. Let your mind go to that place. If you're this woman, how desperate are you? She falls before Jesus because there's nowhere else to go. And the woman was a Gentile. She was a Syrophoenician by birth. And she begged him to cast the demon out of her daughter. And Jesus said to her, let the children be fed first, because it isn't right to take the children's bread and throw it to the dogs. You know, we read this and some of us are shocked by the response of Jesus. And frankly, if you don't understand what's happening, you ought to be shocked. It's only a little easier when you do understand what Jesus is doing. This is a pretty hard reading of it. Jesus said, let me give you an expanded version. Jesus said, you know, it's really not appropriate to take the food that we would give our children and give it to the puppies. Jesus isn't calling the woman a dog like she's of no account. He's calling her something that is attractive and everybody wants to help. And so it's... Pardon me. This is part of the illness. The one thing I did get out of this is I've developed bronchitis. I've never had it before. He's describing her in a playful way, not in a harsh or judgmental way. And the word for dogs there is really the word for a very playful puppy, something that you engage with. And so he's saying it's not appropriate to take the things that are part of your children's sustenance and give it to even the cutest of things. But when he says that the children are eat before the puppies, it's more of a It's almost like a proverb. It would be like if Chris came to me and he said, "Hey, do you think Maurice and I had this big controversy about a year ago, and we couldn't decide what we were going to do with the bathroom or what we were going to do in the kitchen or whatever, and she hadn't really said anything about it for a year or so, and do you think I ought to ask her about it again? And if I say, 'Chris, let sleeping dogs lie,' I'm not calling her a dog. I'm using a proverb or an expression that fits the setting. And so here Jesus is using a proverb or an expression, but he's not calling the woman a dog. I mean, I think it's important for us to recognize that it's not in the character and the nature of Jesus to say, "You're someone not worth it." He's saying instead, well, recognize that you're not really where the focus was to be. You know, your group of people is not where the focus was intended. Now, the woman is pretty quick and spunky with her reply, because she takes off from this immediately, and her response says, "Yes, Lord, but remember that even the puppies under the table eat what the children drop." And he said, you know, for this statement, I think that means because of your persistence, because of the way you handled that, you can go your way and understand you don't need to bring your child here, and she doesn't need to touch the hem of my garment, and you don't need me to lay eyes on her and touch her head and bless her. You can go your way. That demon is already gone from your daughter." And she went home and found the child lying in bed, and the demon was gone. What do you suppose that woman thinks about Jesus? "That honorary outfit called me a puppy." Or do you think that her response is, "What kind of man can cast a demon out of my child?" Do you think it's the playful exchange that she remembers? Or do you believe that it is the powerful result of what happens that changes not only her life, but the life of her child that rings in her head? You see, for all of us, we have to remember that Mark is inserting something in these stories, that things that happen, but he's reminding us later disciples that while Jesus' message was to come and to preach salvation to the house of Israel, that it was never exclusive. And that those who pushed toward him and came to him, whether it was him on the seashore trying to find rest for his disciples, or sneaking off into a house where he unexpectedly runs across a woman who is a Syrophoenician, who's of a different culture and nation and not Israelite at all, a Canaanite, in fact. Remember the ones that Joshua wants to run out of the land. That's this woman. And when Jesus sees her, he responds with compassion and with mercy and with understanding and empathy. When we push toward Jesus, his response is always the reception of us rather than the rejection. And our goal as God's people is to be his image everywhere in the land. You know, a friend of mine, his name is John Marks Hicks, has recently written a book along with some other friends of mine. And in the book, they go back to the story in Genesis. And they really say, you know, this is the core of the gospel, and it's all the gospel is, and it's what we need to really understand. And the notion is that when God brought man into the world, God's intent was to make him in his image and then say, now, go, be productive in all of the world, and let my image be everywhere. Now, the problem is, before that can take place, sin enters in and the destruction of the image takes place. But what Jesus is doing is reconciling that. And he's still telling us by saying being salt and light, and we're to go to be the aroma of Christ and all of those things. All of those things are analogies telling us we need to be God's image everywhere. So when we follow Jesus today, our task as disciples is to be like him. One of the ways that we do that is that we one of the ways that we do that as disciples contemporarily is that wherever we go, we act like him. And that is not as much about you cast demons out or you heal someone. But what we take from this story is that what Jesus did is he honored and rewarded persistence in movement toward him. And so people of God's image need to be those who are honoring and blessing those who are moving toward God. And we want to be supportive of that. Our task is not to judge the world. That's going to be done on the final day. Our task is to bless the world, to exchange for every curse a blessing. It requires turning the other cheek, requires going the extra mile. It requires doing things that all of the rest of the world will see as an anomaly, as unusual, as what couldn't be expected. When you act in a way, in your interaction with people, in a way that the world expects, you're not looking like God. Because the thing that happens in these stories that we're reading in Scripture is that when people walk away, they say, "Who is that person? Who is he?" When they come running to him, recognizing who he is, and they fall before him, the interaction makes them stand back and say, "Really now, who is he?" Our task is to be like him. If we can help you do that, that's our goal. And you can do it as we stand and sing.